So, initially, I sent plans to give the talk that I'm giving at all. I did send this proposal that's called War of Higgins, and they wanted to talk about generic and functional programming in C++. But then I kind of realized that you don't care about it. And instead of that, I kind of throw a couple of C++ idioms that I would really like KD people to start using, which we don't, even I rarely used it before. So it will be mixed bag of completely irrelevant and not connected things. So let's start. Before a short disclaimer, when you want to write a readable code, it doesn't mean that you should take it to people who are absolutely stuck at coding. So when C was invented, when C++ was invented, did anybody use an excuse, don't use classes because people don't know how to use them? No. So everything that I'm currently going to present might be complicated for newcomers. And just like our D pointer that we're using in all the libraries that we have, it is confusing to the people, but it's necessary to make the code either cleaner or faster to compile or binary compatible in case of the D pointer. That was the first disclaimer. The second disclaimer is the term modern C++. Essentially, the term was invented in 2001 by Sandrescu and his book, Modern C++ Design. We will try to use it as C++ 11, not because the things that I'm going to present didn't really exist before, but it's a good excuse that we didn't use them before. So, as an excuse, this is the first time that you can use any of these idioms. I'm wrong. Okay, so the point of every idiom that I'm going to present is safety, speed, and code beauty, whatever that is. And a few examples will be covering the insanity part of C++. And I hope that it will be the most thrilling part of the talk. Only two slides, though. Okay. The first part is memory management. We are really sucking at that, simply because we are using too much manual work, new and delete and stuff like that. And here you can see Bjarne's famous quote, quite recent, that C++ doesn't need the garbage collector because C++ developers don't need that much garbage. It can be true if you're programming as you should, but most of the time, at least 90% of C++ people that I've ever met, not in this room, obviously, use C++ as if it was just plain C with classes. So, nothing more involved than that. So, as I said, the first problem with memory management is that we adore writing new and delete keywords, which is not that good, as you'll see later. Then, there is a problem that we have absolutely no idea what the pointer means. For example, if you see something like this in the API that you are using, what does type star instance return? Okay, we know it's a pointer to type. But is it a singleton class? So is it something that will live for as long as the problem lives? So we don't need to pay attention whether it should be deleted or not. Is it meant as a factory and you are leaving to the client that he should delete the object? Again, similar to singleton, is it owned by the creator of the instance, but he can delete it at any point in time and you somehow need to detect that? The fourth is the optional value. So, for example, you're parsing a string into an integer, and the library designer can choose, okay, I'm going to return now if I didn't manage to parse. I will return pointer to a valid int if I did manage to parse it. So essentially we have, okay, this is one, so this. We have five different meanings for defining something as type pointer. Okay, because it's all bad, we kind of in the community decided to make nice APIs. We decided to create parent and child hierarchy, and the super powerful delete later method, but they don't really solve anything. They're kind of like a delete later is awesome if you're getting a crash for something and just say, okay, I deleted it, I should probably delete it later. And it magically solves your crash and you commit and you're completely satisfied with the code. And the problem with parent-children architecture is that in some cases it doesn't work. It's awesome for the UI, but for example, here, this is usually your core application, which is a long-lived object that is destroyed only when your application is destroyed. So it means that you are reading threads, although you somehow told kids to dispose of them, but it will be disposed as if you didn't tell it anything when the application ends. And that is bad. It would be much nicer if it could have some kind of mechanism to force the compiler to check where the ownership of the pointer is. And thanks to C++ and modern C++, we can actually do it. The first thing that I have no idea, but we all write single points that return pointers. And we have absolutely no idea why are we doing that. You can create a singleton that returns a reference, which actually means I'm going to return you a reference to something that will always exist. You can see from the type signature that like the method does. And it's much easier to implement. Let me just switch to the... Then what you're doing with if start static blah 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 is now then create it another way. And actually this is a thread safe starting from C++11, unlike the thing that we're currently usually doing. The next thing is unit pointer. You're telling your client that he will be the sole owner of the thing that you're returning. So with the type, you are saying that you will never delete the object because you don't have ownership on it. You're telling your client that he needs to delete it. And it will be done automatically. With pointer and shared pointer say almost the same thing. Apart from shared pointer says that, okay, you're sharing this. When you stop using it, it will be deleted. With pointer says similar. We are sharing it, but if I start using it, then you're screwed. You need to check whether the pointer is still valid or not. And for the optional values, there is std optional. Well, there isn't std optional, but let's talk that C++ 17 is here. For C++ 14, it should be in the library technical specifications or whatever, which is not yet standardized. And there is STD expected, or there is a proposal again for C++ 17, which essentially says you're expecting the first type, but the method can return some error type, notifying you of what failed. You can listen to our Sandrescu's talk, I'll post the title afterwards. Okay, so I guess everybody here knows what RAII is. Essentially, that everything in that has initialization and the initialization into a class, which has constructor of this initialization and the delete in the destructor. The mid pointer is the greatest class that C++ 11 invented because it's just a thin wrapper. It doesn't slow down your code, it does absolutely nothing apart from new and delete, but you can't make copies of it, so you can't make mistakes to make a couple of unique pointers that point to the same thing, and it supports smooth semantics. And I guess everybody knows what smooth semantics is, right? If not, ask question. Okay, shared pointer, if you want to make find a single point that is reference counted, again, here is the code. I'm not going to delve much on it. If somebody wants me to, I'll go later. And now, the first insanity slide, you can recognize it by the orange header. One question that's usually at C++ job interviews, is this code okay? And what's wrong with it? you can be louder. Okay. Essentially, we created a cloud that has virtual methods and we don't tolerate it. So we start with. Is it always a bad thing? Then it's not. Okay, if you keep pointers to the base class, obviously. Okay, I didn't really expect serious answer because it's insane to say, but let's go to the example. So, if you have a normal pointer to that, the destructor for the DR is not called. If you have unique pointer, it doesn't get called. If you have shared pointer, the same code goes to the shared pointer. The derived constructor destructor gets called. So this is just to demonstrate that unlike unique pointer, which is really not that smart, it's just a thing like that. Shared pointers are much more powerful. They even remember the type they are containing so that they can delete it properly. So you don't even need to have virtual destructor for this to work correctly. This means the shared pointer has an overhead apart from the obvious left counted one. Is it okay? Is this insane enough? If it's not, let's continue. Okay, because one of my pet peeves is that all our libraries are using new and delete for at least for the parent pointer. And in every constructor, you have the same thing. In every destructor, you have delete D. And does private need to be a pointer? Does D need to be a pointer? It's only a side effect because we didn't want to declare to have the whole class definition before. And we use pointers because they're kind of louder. It doesn't really need to be because it has the same lifetime as a class that owns it. It's kind of part of the class and it should behave like a part of the class. It should behave more like a value and less like a pointer. And for that, just like the unique pointer wraps new and delete inside it, we can create a class that behaves, that has all that we want a D pointer to have, but without all the bug-inducing things. So instead of having a manual initialization, let the compiler create it for you. Okay, the code is again not really important. What is important is, okay, you're declaring the D pointer like this, and when you actually start using it, if your private class doesn't accept anything as the argument is a factor, you don't even need to, obviously, the column over there is necessary. So you don't even need to say initialize D with something. It will automatically call the default constructor of the private. If you want to pass an argument, don't create private and then pass it. Just pass the argument to constructor of D. It cleans up the code, you can't make mistakes, you can't create a null pointer, you can't miss out on deleting it. It's a standard code. I'm guessing somebody will ask later what about inherited D pointer, but let's forget that it exists. I'm sorry? Why? Why do you need to... let's use it for the questions and answers later. One thing you combine the previous D pointer with is something called exit-around pointer, which essentially executes some code before you call any method of the pointed object, and some code that is called after executing the method. So in essence, you are here calling the constructor. Then C++ will call the method in the pointer, then it will call the destructor of the proxy. So you can kind of neatly wrap around the code that you want to be executed before and after methods. And because this was totally vague, I'm going to just show how it works. So, we are calling the method on the pointer, this code is being called. Afterwards, this code is being called. What are we doing down there? We are just normally attending something to some class. Currently listening. And this is not an insanity side. This is actually useful. Okay, the next part is about ranges, algorithms, and stuff. The first part is inspired by a great presentation by Sean Perrin called C++ Season. Again, I strongly advise you to look at it. One thing that we as a Qt community hardly ever use are algorithms in standard library. We even use Qsort from Qt, and that's, I guess, all the algorithms that we ever need. Everything else we are just implementing manually. And STL has really, really a large amount of algorithms. As in before this, as an example, this code is taken from, again, inspired really by Sean Perrin, but I decided to find code that is in KDE. So, in essence, this code kind of looks weird. You have 17 lines and you need to deduce what they're doing. So, let's do it. The first thing that I need here is that in C++, we are used to using ranges that include the start but not the ending. So, we definitely need to remove the plus ones and less or equal to. That's the first step. The second step, we are here removing a number of items. Do we actually need to remove them one by one? What are the benefits, apart from slower execution, of removing elements one by one? If it's a list, you need to traverse it 10 times in order to, unless it's some kind of cache list with cache pointers. If it's a vector, it's even worse because for each element you need to move a chunk of memory from one point to another. Instead of that, you should probably be using something that is removed from this place to this place or from this place this number of items. It should be much, much faster. The same thing goes for the last one. We have a for each, which inserts all the elements that we erased before, just in another place. Again, it should be replaced by a single call to insert that inserts a collection. If the API that we are using with the class data doesn't support this method, change the class. I think QList doesn't support these methods, so change the class. Don't use QList. Okay, so let's remove the comments. What we are left kind of is more readable. You're essentially moving a bunch of items from one place to another. Do you know STL algorithm that does move one bunch of items to another? It's called STD rotate. It's not that obvious while you're looking at it, but it kind of does what you want it to do. Does STD rotate need explanation? I can try to draw in green. Okay, in questions and answers time. Okay, everything else. But that's for the algorithms. In other languages, we are kind of used to something much, much more powerful. For example, we all use SQL. And we have a collection of things, and we are applying some filters to it. Then we are doing something to the list that we got after applying filtering. And that's kind of common thing in all function programming languages, including Haskell. And mentioning Haskell code here is tribute to Walter, because I think that he was the first guy who presented Haskell at the academy, now I'm second. Essentially, the Haskell code does the same thing, filters a list of things, and then does something with the result. In C++, we have the algorithms for it. So, for example, STD transform is like map or projection in SQL. Find if and copy if are similar to filtering. The problem with SQL algorithms is that they all are receiving pairs of iterators, so you can't really train them. For each call, you need to declare, for example, a temporary variable, then apply something temporary variable, because you always need to pass cbegin cend or got_begin_button. In order to fix that, our kind people at Boost created a library called BoostChange, which again should be part of C++ 17, if all ends up well. It looks like this. You have a collection of things, pass it through a filter, so the count is less than 30, pass it through a filter, addition is greater than 60. You could have put it in one filter, but Boost doesn't care. And after that, transform it, and you get a new collection. And if this is done properly, so if the Boost library is perfectly implemented, then it's almost, this will be much, much faster than doing this manually. If you want to see some concrete examples, So, again, this is called from KDAs. You're doing something, you're swapping keys and values in a map. It would be much shorter to write something like this. Get role names and do a transformation that swaps keys and values. And it's, at least for me, it's much more readable. Although I am a kind of functional programmer apart from C++, so this kind of is expected to be much readable for me. Again, we have a huge for each that you need to deduce what it's doing. If you see this or KDL filtering on std bound and stuff like that, you kind of can guess that it's doing exact match on some regex, then do a transformation, get values for everything that you got, filtered, checking whether something is the correct type, and afterwards convert it to that type. Unfortunately, these two are a little bit ugly, but that's kind of how QRNs work, and it's okay. And there are a few more similar ones, which I'll skip. The cool thing about Boost Range is that you can use it in range 4. So you can say for all items that are in VH operators, processed, filter it through so that role IDs don't contain blah blah blah. And it should be more readable. If it's not, then don't take on creativity. Okay, so this is for the ranges. Any questions so far? The last part is about typing, because after complaining about memory safety and complaining about how we don't do any functional programming in C++, well, typing is the next big thing that Walker talked about the last time. Although he specialized in expression templates, I'm not going to talk only about that. Not really have an example for it as well. So the first thing to start with is the auto keyword. And not only because you are able to type huge things like other dumps or just in the map usually. So auto, the first thing that auto does is save the typing. But it doesn't stop only there. You cannot declare a variable with auto and forget to initialize it, which is kind of neat. The second thing is you can't declare a lambda without auto, because you don't know the signature of the type of the lambda. You can use std function something something, but it's already slow because it uses the lambda. And you can't get mirroring information. So unlike here, it returns length as an integer, which means that the string can have minus 5. Other libraries tend to return some unsigned type. Is it unsigned, integer unsigned, long, unsigned, long, long? You have no idea. You don't need to declare it, not even with size T or something, just put auto and the compiler will install the type for you. It's not dynamic typing skill. You don't need any dynamic typing, you just need something to tell you what the actual typing is. Now, again, a question, what's wrong with this code? And I do understand that we are not really STL programmers, but this is STL. Okay, for Qt, this would be even worse than STL because it uses top and right. And since this is not C begins C and or const begin constant, it will make a copy of the collection. But since this is a small line, just in for us to be common before. What is wrong with this? We know that STL's map is essentially a collection of STD pairs. Here more. Right? So if we are going to traverse a collection of STD pairs, we are defining a pair, string, string, and traversing the collection. The problem here is the fact that we are thinking that this is the correct type. Now we are going to reveal what is actually the correct type. So this is kind of like a neat trick to reveal a type of something that is auto deduced. Let's create a class that is not implemented, called, for example, ColorOut. And while compiling, the compiler will tell you that for the type that we have used it, it cannot be instantiated. So we are copying the type back to our code. And we need to clean it a little bit so that it becomes readable. So we have a pair. This is actually the string of char is not a string. And for some reason, the copy didn't really work. But it would say something like this. So do you see the difference between the first and the second? Yeah. Essentially, a map is a collection of pairs, but not of the pairs that you think of. The T is always const. So in this code, the original one, C++ would do a copy to create one kind of pair from another kind of pair, making your code much slower than it would do the author. And I'm kind of hoping that this was mostly a positive experience why you should use auto. Now something that can be considered a really good thing and a really bad thing that we kind of discovered at the last academy out of auto stuff. What do you think that this code, what is the output of this code? And obviously nobody wants to tell because you're expecting that what you're expecting is not true. Apart from, again, people who already know the issue. If I compile this and execute, you'll get the exact same results. And obviously, I didn't a couple of times. Because when you enable something that is enabled by default in KD frameworks, to use expression templates for the plus operator, you're not longer concatenating strings, you're just getting a lazy value that is string builder or something like that, result 2, and it gets references to row and number. The original row and number will be evaluated only when you try to convert it to string. So at this
references to original objects. If the original object is destroyed, you get segmentation fault. If it's not destroyed, you get the new value instead of the old one. And for me, this was one of the greatest things about Otto. For a lot of people that I asked on my blog, everybody was shocked and started finding bugs to cure. Which I tried to explain, kinda is a bug, but it's much better that it's a bug than not using it. Okay, the next part, one of the things that we are always taught in high school and at the university is that object-oriented programming is all about encapsulation. And then you see STL and stdmap reveals that it collects everything using std pairs, which is not really encapsulated, right? And we are not far from it. For example, I don't know, graphics scene or anything in Qt, they kind of require you to add things that inherit Qt graphics scene item and things like those, and to rely on virtuals. And at some point, the original author of the library wants to change the implementation for the SG item, and he kind of realizes I can't do it in ADI compatible way, and we get Qt 5. Which is, again, really cool, but the problem is that it could have been avoided. You can create collections that accept any type that has certain methods in it, and you don't need to force the user to actually inherit something of yours. You don't even need to force the user to actually use virtual methods or anything. You can all wrap it up in a nice package. Okay, do you know what duck typing is? Everybody? Okay, so if it quacks like a duck and walks like a duck, it's a duck. The same if we have a method called name that returns a string, we can call it something that is nameable. This was the obviously wrong example, but it doesn't matter. But it is the example that I actually implemented. Although it's called duck collection, it has absolutely nothing to do with ducks. So you're creating a class called duck that receives a name through its constructor. It has a method name that is not virtual. It doesn't inherit from anything. And the method name does something. You have another class that's all the same. And you have a class lizard, which doesn't want to give you its name because lizards are secretive, right? But you still can do something like this. It's not inheriting from anything. You can say add new something without using void pointers. Void pointers would be the classical C, right? We want to do something more advanced. And the compiler will complain at this line that this class doesn't have method called name. Again, it doesn't do anything with inheritance or anything else. It's just polymorphism without inheritance. If we try to compile it, it will just do what I just said. It complains that something doesn't have method name. Let's remove it. it compiles, and it works as it should. So essentially what we are designing here is to do some type programming, which is not real dynamic programming. We are going a little bit up to open the Docker collection. It's quite trivial to implement. You're just creating an add method that is templated, and instead of forcing the user to create a class with virtual methods in it, you're creating your own internal private class that has virtuals in it. So in essence, what are you doing? Adding something to the list of ducks. You're creating a thin wrapper called duck instance and passing the current object to it. Below that, the duck instance is quite trivial. It has a constructor, it has a method called sayName, which in turn calls the name method from the original class. So this way we haven't exposed absolutely anything. And we have a type safe code that has absolutely no issues. It automatically deletes everything that it should and things like that. The only problem that I currently see with it is that when we add lizard back, because it's a templated code, it will output at least a line from the original code. And we kind of don't like it. So, one of the things that new C++ introduced is static assert, which is somewhere around here. And you can do something like this. Static assert that the class that was passed has a method called name, and you get a value from that type checker. And obviously you write out error string if it doesn't. If you try to compile, now the code above was hidden, we have static assert that failed. Is that okay? Nobody's going to ask how do I create a type checker that has a name. Okay. Because nobody will ask, I will explain anyway. So, one of the oldest C++ features is called SPINE, whatever it's pronounced. Substitution failure is not an error. This is not really a complete tester for a specific method name. It just tests whether a class has anything inside that has that name. What does it do? It's, again, a template class which never gets really instantiated. So again, at runtime you have absolutely no performance penalties. It's only a huge performance penalty at the compile time. So what are you doing? You're trying to essentially call a method called test here while you are accessing the column type thing. And you're passing it a zero or a null pointer or whatever you want. Then the compiler will see, okay, I have two choices for the test function. The second choice is chosen if the first one doesn't match, and its return type is something that is conveniently called std false type. So it's kind of equivalent to obviously to true and false, but during the compilation time. If this thing above matches, what does it mean? We are decotyping a pointer to a member of the class called name. If this type matches and decotype is valid, it means that test of null pointer will call that function. So it further means that the return type for that function is std true type. Is that okay? Below it, you have type def done in a new way by using the using keyword, which you don't see. Okay, so using type equals to whatever the above function returns. So using type equals to decotype test of key and pass it a null pointer. And in the end, you just say that enum value equals the type value, which kind of returns the true or false as a constant. And
Can you use the NullPTR instead of 0 then? You can, right?
Yeah. I have absolutely no idea why I wrote a 0. But since this is C++ 11, okay. This would be much clearer. So you can create a lot of cool things in C++. And this is not really insane if you try to read the actual STL library implementation, and even some parts of Qt, you will first get headaches. How do you say headache? Okay. And afterwards you will fall in love with C++ all over again. It happened to me quite recently, 5 years ago or something like that. And we are going to our last slide and last incentive slide. I don't know whether you're aware, but a void pointer constructor or Q variant is present. And again, if I was interviewing any of you for a job, what would your answer be? When can you call a constructor that is private?
The same correct answer is if we are in a Q variant and we are implementing the class itself, we can call its private. Is there any other opportunity to call somebody's private? Fan classes. Okay, and that's the only two legal ones that I can actually recall at the moment. But we are going to show that according to the standard, they are not. So this is the code. You have the same thing in main and the same thing in something that obviously doesn't belong into qvariant.h or qvariant.cpp. And obviously, Qt didn't account for the fact that I want to be a friend of qvariant. So in essence, I can do this. I will get a compiler error in main, and it compiles. But I won't get a compiler error in the about method. The compilation has passed. And again, this is not something that you would ever want to use in a production code. But it's kind of neat to know that C++ can do stuff like this. Does anybody at the moment have any ideas before I show the code? And this is the most fun thing about C++ that I learned the last year or so. What is special about qvariant? It has a lot of truncated methods. And if a method is truncated, you can specialize on it whenever you want, including the classes that are defined and implemented by somebody else. So in essence, you can define a completely custom structure that you're certain that nobody ever instantiated qvariant any of the methods against it, and then pretend that you are still in qvariant and declare qvariant can convert, for example, on exactly your function. And you can do whatever you want in the body of the function. And that's why I love C++. Because although it allows you to write extremely clean code if you're paying attention, it also allows you to do impossible things like static introspection, which we saw, like accessing private parts of classes that are not yours and things like that. And similar things. One of the things that we are left with is the last slide with some recommendations for further reading. Modern C++ Design is one of the greatest books ever written, and if you can understand it, you definitely know C++. most people that I ever talked with who actually work, for example, I'm not a full-time C++ developer or anything. Most of the people who are just didn't understand half of it. If he, the guy plays with templates in insane ways, and I really, really recommend seeing it. C++ is in, before mentioned by Sean Perry. Again, a couple of really nice advices for any developer. Various semantics and range algorithms by Chandler, who is coined by one of the lead developers, kind of announces what they are planning to do with ranges for the future revisions of C++. And the last one, systematic error handling in C++ by Alexandrescu, which is mostly about the expected of something class. Okay. I'm left with 15 minutes for questions. This was almost to the second.
Thanks so much.